Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the Las Vegas arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton, singing the blues.
And taking a break from the top-rolling blackjack tables, Scott Hardy.
Yes, I've managed to crawl out of bed this morning to record this fabulous podcast.
That's what we do every time we do a podcast.
All right.
Yeah. So we're here this week to talk about the 2019 Creation Entertainment Las Vegas Star Trek Convention and everything that went down. Talk about our highlights, maybe some disappointments and all that sort of stuff. Give you a real listening picture of what happened at this year's Star Trek Con for those that couldn't attend.
Well, let's jump right into it with maybe some of our highlights here. Scott, what is something that jumps out to you as a big moment that you really appreciated?
The big one for me is quite a personal one, actually. So basically, I'm a big fan of Mike McMahon's work, who you may know as the sort of head showrunner of the Star Trek Lower Decks cartoon that's coming next year on CBS All Access. He was doing a panel on Sunday, just gone. So I brought along his book based on the Twitter Season 8 Next Generation Twitter handle. I met him in the lobby to get an autograph, and it turns out he was standing with the entire writers team of the show. So I got all of their autographs in the book totally for free, and they were all fabulous.
Now, didn't you get a chance to go up and even ask like a question of him during the writers panel for Star Trek Lower Decks?
I certainly did. I was first in line, and I asked a question that I quite liked the answer to.
Yeah, you essentially were like, hey, what's the worst job, or what's the job aboard this ship that you would not want to do? You asked that of the writers, and I think everybody agreed. What was it again?
I think the one he came up with was it scraping carbon off of slightly harder carbon?
Yeah, like, to me it sounds funny. Like, I think that Lower Decks panel, it makes me excited even more for Lower Decks. And, like, they're playing within the Star Trek universe, they're going to be having fun with it, but they're not making fun of it, and I just get really excited when they talk about we're going to have characters that are kind of very distinct, but you can believe them in the Star Trek universe. One of them, Ensign Mariner. The reason she's an ensign, though, is she keeps getting demoted again and again and again. She knows everything, but just can't take orders. That, to me, sounds funny, and I can buy it like an Ensign Row sort of character, and they even brought that Ensign Row comparison
up. And there's been
up.
Characters on Star Trek where we think, shouldn't this character be demoted regularly,
kidding.
Like Worf?
Yeah, so I mean, I'm really excited for Star Trek Lower Decks moving forward as well.
Cam, yeah, same.
Do you have a highlight that is maybe connected to what Scott just talked about?
Yeah, this is, I guess, going to take a little bit of a digression away from Star Trek just for a second, but Tyler and I are both massive fans of Survivor.
Reality TV series.
Exactly. Yeah. And we have followed that show since pretty much its inception. I was on board with Episode 2 way back in the year 2000.
I was literally on board with Episode 1.
Were you? Yeah. Nice, you got me beat. But we knew that two of the writers on Lower Decks, John Cochran and David Wright, were Survivor contestants, all-star Survivor contestants. John Cochran won the Fans versus Favorites, the second version of it, season. And we knew they were going to be here with the Lower Decks panel. And we had a mission, I think, going into this weekend to, you know, get a photo with them or something. We didn't really expect much, frankly. But we encountered both of them in the hallway. And we met John Cochran separately. And I went up, and you're always a little cagey when you approach, you know, a celebrity in a hallway. You never quite know what reaction you're going to get. He could not have been nicer and more gracious about just taking a few minutes to geek out about Survivor with me. And then, yeah, we met David Wright in the Picard Museum room. And once again, could not have been a nicer guy. And
I think both of them came off as genuinely interested in, like, what we had to say about the franchise.
And they're not actors.
Yeah. But it was just like, I could not have gone better for an experience where, like, these are two of my favorite players on the series, and to encounter them at a Star Trek convention where they're geeking out over this franchise. For us to geek out at a Star Trek convention, you think it's because we're encountering, you know, Patrick Stewart in the hallways, but for Cam and Tyler, it was because we're encountering, like, these reality TV show contestants who turned out to be the nicest guys and very thoughtful with their answers about Survivor. And I even got to ask Cochran all about maybe his favorite TNG episodes, too. All good things for anybody who's interested.
Very good taste, people.
Yeah, so that was just so exciting. And the fact that they were super nice and seemed to be interested in, like, what we were saying to them as well, which let's be honest, maybe we're a little jaded at this point with some Star Trek celebs that we've encountered.
I can't think of a single one, Tyler.
So, which, look, I always love my experiences with the Star Trek celebs, but these two gents, they've not grown wary of Star Trek fans at this point.
Yeah, and I can't wait to see them at future Star Trek cons, because I think, you know, once they become fully immersed in the Star Trek world and have, you know, their show out there and can talk about it, I think these guys could be amazing panelists further down the road and have a bit of a relationship with the fan community.
Yeah, so Scott, all you had to do is listen to Tyler and Cam geek out all day Sunday about this. Has this inspired you to pursue any future seasons of Survivor?
I seem to just recall trying to go to bed last night and being bombarded with Survivor facts while trying to go to sleep. So I'm not quite sold yet, unfortunately. Okay.
You only got 38 seasons, you know, to catch up on.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Over with me, like, a big highlight for me was, you know, Star Trek Picard is premiering next year. I think everyone's really excited about that. We had Jeri Ryan up on stage. She was part of the Picard panel featuring Jonathan Frakes and Jonathan Dell'Arco, moderated by Ian Smelling, I believe, did this one. And I tell you, when that trailer went on in this packed auditorium, thousands of people, I think everybody just had chills, you know, especially when Seven of Nine came on screen. To listen to the auditorium just erupt in applause and cheers, it was something thrilling, you know? Like, I just generally felt this communal experience. So Scott and I, we go do our Jeri Ryan photo op, and I go up to her right before the photo's about to be taken. I'm like, I can't wait for this. You know, I really love that trailer. When you came on, it was just so surprising. She pauses. We look at the camera, they take the photo. That's pretty typical for like a Star Trek photo. Then she turns to me after the photo's done and she's like, were you surprised? She, again, is interacting with me. She always comes off as like super nice, super genuine. I think she's just like one of the gems that we have with these conventions, like the people that genuinely love kind of being here, interacting with the fans. Like that was like a big, big highlight for me is the Jeri Ryan encounter. Did not disappoint.
Scott, you were there too.
Mm-hmm.
What, did the magic, did you feel it as well?
I'm still feeling it now. I haven't washed, bathed, or changed since that photo op happened, and you can attest, I am starting to smell.
Yes.
Yeah, I met Jeri Ryan twice in the past, and every time she's been so gracious and just really, really friendly. So, there's some Star Trek celebs you're maybe a little intimidated going into. I think she's one. She's such an icon of the franchise. And you never quite know, you know, these actors are the ones the most approached, the most, you know, hit up for photo ops, autographs. So it would be super easy to get jaded. But every time I've encountered her, she's just so nice.
Yeah. Why don't we circle back around, Scott? Is there another highlight that really popped up to you over these last 5 days of conventioneering?
A bit of a small one again. I tried to ask a few questions this year to try and get on the microphone and ask a bit of a varied amount of questions to different people because we seem to have a lot of the same questions. At these panels. And I believe on Wednesday, on the first day, I lined up to ask Dominic Keating a question about his research in the role, about, you know, British police, British military. So I walked up to the microphone and I say, hello there, I am a serving British police officer. And then Dominic Keating jumps out of his chair and runs away.
It was pretty hilarious, though.
Yeah.
That got a great laugh, and they really hammed it up to a certain degree. Like, I think the answer that he gave back to you was not as in-depth at all, but I think the initial response was something that we were all talking about, like, after that panel. Like, it was hilarious.
I mean, much like his character, I wasn't expecting anything out of him, so...
Well, yeah.
That was a fun moment, though. Anytime you can get, like, a big crowd reaction... Just something related to your question. I think that's great. It gives something the actor something to play off of.
But it's also interesting, like, you kind of have an idea which panels are going to be the good ones. Like, the Enterprise panels are always a hoot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think you're also guaranteed a lot of fun. Look, if Marina Sirtis is on stage, and for me, Voyager panels are often, you've got, like, let's say Garrett Wong. As long as Garrett Wong is there, there's going to be this, like, energy level that you wouldn't have otherwise. So it's kind of, it's good for us, like, we know exactly who you want to, you know, hit up all mm-hmm. these years because they've just proven in the past how good they are.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, you know, you mentioned Voyager. A lot of the Voyager cast members really seem to bring it as well as the Enterprise people.
Yeah.
But one of my highlights was Mr. Jason Isaacs.
Yes.
Now, it was kind of an interesting, unorthodox approach to having him on a panel this time where we had the Ensign Mount panel. And for the first half hour, it was Ian Spelling and Ensign Mount talking about the character of Pike and the second season of Star Trek Discovery. And it was like a totally fine conversation. You know, there was a little bit of interesting insights here and there, but it was a little bit dry, I guess, for when you've got thousands of people watching. Better for maybe closed circuit TV. Like if I've been watching it as like a special feature, maybe you get drawn in more, watch it on TV. But at the half hour point, they brought out Jason Isaacs, and suddenly this panel became the highlight for me of the entire convention in terms of panels.
Yeah, I don't think the gents had actually met before this. I think this is their first encounter.
Yeah, and so you have Jason Isaacs and Anson Mount opposite each other. Ian Spelling just fades into the background happily, obviously willing to let these two guys interview each other. But here you have two actors who've been in the industry for like 20 years just talking to each other about the business, their experiences, making jokes about each other, you know, about their Star Trek experiences. Jason Isaacs is a treasure and is just trolling Anson Mount every chance he can get. It was probably the funniest panel of the week.
Well, I'll give you some good examples here. You know, Anson Mount was talking to Jason Isaacs about how he's loved Star Trek ever since he was like 7 or 8. Jason Isaac turns to him and says, since the 1940s? And like, Anson Mount starts cracking up. Like, like you could just tell, like, he was laughing at this. There's another Jason Isaacs moment where Anson Mount is talking about how he's had the experience following Jason Isaacs' career, just watching other things that he's done and really appreciate it. And Jason Isaacs turns to him and is like, I've never seen you in anything before in my life. You know? But you could tell that Jason Isaacs, he's still watching the series. He's following along with Discovery because he was asking Anson Mount a lot of thoughtful questions about what it's like to, you know, take over for the captain at this point. And even just funny stuff about like how uncomfortable the uniform is to wear on board this show.
What I love about Jason Isaacs is that, first off, he's hilarious. Like, the guy can just toss off quips left, right, and center. So he's very, very funny. But when he has to get sincere, he does it in a way that actually feels authentic and real. Like, he actually has something very insightful to say about the experience and maybe the morals of Star Trek that doesn't feel like a canned response, which you do get from some, oh, the wonders of Gene Roddenberry, Vision, et cetera, Utopia. Whereas, like, when Jason Isaacs talks about it, he brings his personal experiences, his own storytelling ability. And so I really feel every time I see a Jason Isaacs panel, he's giving me something entirely original every time.
Well, it's, again, going to be one of those panels that we just have to circle in our programs, and we know that any time Jason Isaacs is going to be at a convention, we're not missing his panel. We could be at one of the non-Star Trek, you know, genre conventions back home. I'm going to Jason Isaacs if he's there, just talking about, like, you know, Malfoy from Harry Potter.
Yeah, and he crashed a panel, you know, later in the convention with Mary Chifo, Jane Brooke, and Kenneth Mitchell. And, like, again, like, he was a big, like, hilarious presence there, too. So I hope he sticks around for a long time. I hope he doesn't get jaded of the Star Trek convention experience. He's been doing Harry Potter ones for quite a while now, so he has a pretty high tolerance, I think, for convention scenes. But I love seeing him, and I would love to see, you know, a 75, 80-year-old Jason Isaacs still being hilarious on stage.
Well, speaking of that, something he can aspire to, Bill Shatner. I think over the years, doing 50 years of conventions, maybe some people might have, you know, mixed experiences. And I'll say this, I think the last 2-3 years, Shatner has been on fire every year he's been coming out, and it's been a bit of a different pace. You know, I remember at times he's been talking a lot about his horses, or Cam, one of the go-tos that we often refer to is he read a book about pixels a couple years ago.
Oh my God.
And we had to sit there for about 8 minutes, maybe even 12, listening to pixels from, you know, Shatner. This year was, you know, he's continuing on that momentum for previous years. Like, he was on fire. He gets out there talking about his blues album and how, like, a white guy from Montreal shouldn't be doing it. But what does he care? And then he starts just wailing on stage, I'm singing the blues. And, like, we're cracking up there with this. He was hilarious. Like, this is an entertainer. I think he knows at this point how to get reactions out of the crowd that'll entertain them. And it totally worked for me. But they're also, like, really thoughtful, sweet moments where, like, he goes up to the mic, he says to the guy standing on the other side, like, what do you do? Like, he was asking him questions. What's your name? What do you do? And the guy explained that he's on disability, suffers from depression and bipolar. And Shatner's like, how are you doing today? And the guy's like, each day is a struggle, but today's a good day. And Shatner's like, I'm glad. I'm glad you're happy. And he was pumping him up. And, like, you hear the auditorium, like, just cheer for this as well. And Shatner is getting this out of people now. And I really also appreciate the fact that as much as Shatner's building people up, he's happy to tear them down. You know, like, it is amazing because, let's be honest, you get a lot of these questions. They're awkwardly phrased. sometimes kind of rude or passive aggressive, and a lot of these actors just have to sit there, you know, bear it. Shatner's not putting up with any of this at this point. He was ripping apart some people. Like, there's, you know, a lot of urging of this one fella to just ask a question. The guy just stood at the mic for 5 minutes talking.
Yeah.
And Shatner's like, what is the question? They kept yelling at him. But it's just entertaining. And we haven't always seen this side of Shatner over the years. And this has just been a real treat the last few years for me.
One of my favorite moments was actually when he was talking about his blues album. And the moderator, who really didn't moderate anything, you know, when Shatner's on stage, Shatner runs the stage.
Yeah.
But that was Adam Malin of Creation Entertainment, just said, who's the producer? And Shatner's like, doesn't matter. And he just likes to toss off these lines that just made me laugh so hard. There's one point where he was, I can't even remember the phrase. It's what, like some common phrase or something. He said, from the country of, I don't remember. Yeah. It's just like, even these moments where he has like kind of a dead end of where he's going, he just like manages to make it hilarious.
But I'll say this, Shatner's well into his 80s. The man is sharp. Like, yeah. It's just, like, I can only aspire to be that sharp when I'm that age. And, like, I think what you also gather from him when he's talking about his stories from the past is this guy never stops working. You know, this guy will do – and we heard that from Rene Bergeron at his Deep Space Nine panel. You know, he doesn't really take time off during the weekends. Like, he's, you know, doing his day-to-day job, then, you know, Monday through Friday. Then he, I don't know, goes to, like, a racetrack to race cars all weekend. He goes to a charity to raise money. It's that sort of stuff that we get out of the – and I think that's just kind of key to growing old quite well. But there's other sweet stuff, you know, like him talking about, like, limo rides with who he considered, you know, a brother, Leonard Nimoy, and talking about the effort to get off cigarettes and how Shatner finally decided, I'm not going to smoke anymore. And Nimoy just couldn't do that. And they talked about how it was related to his death. And, you know, it was like very heartfelt stuff that you wouldn't typically associate with Shatner. And I think we're just appreciating it more and more. What's your experience been like with Shatner over the years, Scott?
Very up and down. I mean, I met him back in 2008 at the Las Vegas convention when it was still in the Hilton. And his panel, from my memory, to be fair, it was over 10 years ago now, was very much more that sort of downbeat, just questions about, hey, in this episode, did you do this? And he would give like a half-assed answer and just sort of tread through it, if you know.
He's very clear about the fact, like, it's very difficult to remember things that happened 50 years ago for what he just considered like a week-to-week job at the time.
Yeah.
So that's why I think for some actors, I think what you want to do is ask them very specific, very, very specific questions about, say, a given episode or something. But for most of them, ask them more about kind of maybe their experience in a broader sense, even though I am more preferential towards those specific questions because they're much easier to answer for actors.
Yeah, and it's funny because, you know, Scott, you and I have been coming to this convention for, you know, like 8 or 9 years.
Yeah.
And Tyler, this is your 6th year. I remember in the past where I would see Shatner panels, especially early into my convention experiences, and I was always really excited because the original series was my big series. That was my favorite. And I would always be disappointed because he would do like, I don't know, like 25 minutes just plugging some recent project.
Yep.
I feel like he's gotten more succinct about doing that. Like, he did talk about his blues album. He got some funny anecdotes, but it was only a couple minutes versus, like, I remember him just going on about that. I don't remember the name of the album. It was something like Experience the Wonder or something like that for like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Where you're just like, okay. I know Shatner's like a super competitive guy. I like to hope that maybe he's seen another panel here or there and been like, oh, maybe I should stop tossing out all this self-promotion stuff.
One last Shatner story here, because it's still my favorite. It kind of epitomizes some of these awkward encounters that you might see. But fella goes up and tries pitching Shatner his script idea.
Oh, that's the worst. Never, ever. Anyone listening, please never, ever do this.
Never do this. But the guy says, I've got a great script for you. Would you consider coming back to play Captain Kirk? And Shatner is kind of playing along. He's like, give me the pitch. Just give me the pitch. You've got 3 sentences. Give me the pitch. And the guy gave 1 sentence, had nothing to do with the pitch, gave another sentence, had nothing to do with the pitch.
Yeah, it was like, I don't want to spoil it.
Yeah, he finally said, no, I want you to just read the script. I don't want to spoil it. And Shatner's explaining, look, I do this. I go into the studio execs every day. You have 3 sentences to get them hooked onto this. The guy said, okay, can I try again? He's like, that was your 3rd line. No. He literally just walked away.
And that's very good advice he gave this guy. I hope the guy kind of picks up on it.
Yeah.
When you're pitching talent on a script, you're not approaching them as a fan. You're saying, here's what you are doing and why you want to do it, not, well, you should read it. I don't want to spoil it for you.
Yeah. I think the furthest the guy got into it is, well, you're not resurrected. And it's just like, okay.
Yeah.
But
awesome.
And okay. Scott, back to you, sir.
I think moving away from panels for me, I really enjoyed seeing the First Duty Picard exhibit that came over from San Diego Comic-Con. So for those who don't know, there was the exhibit at San Diego Comic-Con, which had sort of the history of Jean-Luc Picard. Lots of props from the show and some things purposely made for the exhibit as well. Some trophies and some really strangely edited posters and pictures that you may spot on social media. But I really enjoyed seeing it in the flesh, and they were playing the trailer on the TV the whole time.
Did you not get chills? Like every time like that trailer came on, I would, out of the corner of my eye, I would just kind of get like some chills. You know, it's that kind of communal experience to a certain degree.
Well, do you know what the surprising thing? I mean, also tying back to what you were saying about the trailer playing earlier, there were people at this convention that hadn't seen the trailer.
I know. I actually had an experience watching that trailer. I saw someone who was watching it, and they were like, oh my God. When 7 of 9 popped up, they were like, oh my God. And then it fades to the Picard logo, and then they walked away.
So they
didn't know the
it.
Data. Yeah. And I was like, wow. Like, how do you become like a diehard Star Trek fan who goes to a convention that costs you a lot of money to go to and just be like, yeah, I haven't watched the Picard, you know, trailer.
It's an amazing experience and surprise for anybody that was not even aware that there was a Star Trek Picard spinoff in the works. This must have been just a revelation for them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Try to explain CBS All Access to them.
Oh. All right. Yeah, no, I love that Picard exhibit. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, so what were your favorite things to see in there?
You know what? It's kind of silly, but even just stuff like the Captain Picard Day banner, you know, hanging around there. But there's also like kind of a treasure trove of little prizes, but like awards that Picard has received throughout his career. It's just kind of fun to think about those sitting somewhere in the background of a scene in Star Trek Picard, and just kind of the thought and care that they put into these things that will maybe just look like pixels on a screen.
Sure.
I still thought it was like very thoughtful and great. You know, it didn't have to be all the stuff that we're already super familiar with, you know, like a model of the Enterprise D. I've seen that before.
Right.
What about you, Cam?
I mean, it's awesome to see the iconic things like the Resican flute. Or also the archaeology statue that he had in that episode. Is that the Chase?
Or was it Gambit? Mm. Oh, no. Chase had to do with his old mentor. And,
yeah. Yeah, I believe it's from that one. And the one that they like toss aside in Generations after the ship crashes.
Wasn't it like something like a 100,000-year-old relic and he just tosses it behind his back?
Yeah. I can totally get that in Nemesis, where it's made by someone who didn't watch the series, but that's made by like David Carson and like has a lot of oversight from Berman and everything. That's so weird. But no, just seeing all that sort of stuff, and I don't know, Scott, you and I went looking to see maybe if there was any hints for about the Picard series in there. Did anything jump out at you, really?
I mean, I had a good dig through it. We were checking sort of dates of the timelines, trying to figure out when stuff happened. They've said on Twitter that there are some big hints in there, if you can find them. I mean, I spent a good hour going through it, and I didn't really come up with much, to be honest with you.
What I took away from it, though, is that I think Data plays more than just a little cameo bit. I think it's more than just fan service here. I think whatever it is, like, his storyline is going to be integral to how things unfold during the course of the season, which is not to say I don't think Brent Spiner is going to be a co-lead by any means.
Well, he said he's not even a recurring, whatever that means. He said, but he has a presence throughout. So take that for what it means.
I wouldn't read too much into something like that.
Yeah.
But I think the Data stuff is going to be very important for us. The one thing that might bum me out, though, is I don't gather that Beverly is going to be well featured in this, and I that disappoints me, because I think that there is still a lot of potential between those two characters to explore where their relationship is, because I think we talked about it. I think Beverly's the one who's best positioned to maybe call him out on things and really put him in his place, and I think that's like a really interesting dynamic to play with, especially in kind of the new era of TV, where maybe that could not have always been the case. But you know, there was a tea set featured in this Picard exhibit that did reference Beverly, so I'm hoping that we get some Dr. Crusher moments at some point throughout the course of the series.
Kind of just related to the Picard series, though. We saw a lot of TNG actors this weekend all getting asked about a Picard spinoff appearance, as well as actually Kate Mulgrew as well.
Yeah.
Was there any responses that jumped out to you as at least slightly interesting? No one's going to obviously confirm anything.
Yeah. That's tough. Okay, well, we were doing the math during the Star Trek Picard panel because what we can figure out is that Jonathan Frakes is directing episodes 3 and 4. And then with the whole Jerry Ryan involvement, she explained that her first appearances were when Jonathan Frakes was directing. And I think he also, we did the math, they said it in two different ways, and we could figure out that 7 of 9 is going to appear in episode 3 for the first time. She'll be there for at least 2 episodes, but it sounds as if she's going to be there for more than just those 2 Jonathan Frakes episodes. So for me, like, that kind of nerdy stuff is what I was more drawn into, but apparently it was a big spoiler that she dropped based on the reactions from the actors on stage with her that they filmed something at City Walk at Universal Studios Hollywood, and I did some Google images, and I don't know, it just looks like some random studio lot at Universal Hollywood Studios. I didn't get any big spoilers from that. It looks like it could be Starfleet headquarters or something. Like, who knows?
Yeah. It was interesting to me that, you know, a lot of the cast members are very cagey about it. You know, John DeLancey or Michael Dorn. Although I thought it was odd that Michael Dorn was like, I don't know, the makeup's a big deal. Well, this is the man who was trying to pitch a Captain Worf spinoff.
I think this is also a man that knows that he can negotiate better for a good appearance fee if he doesn't seem all that interested right now.
Yeah, Kate Mulgrew seemed really enthusiastic about doing it, though.
Yeah, I think she kind of likes the idea of returning to this iconic character, which if anybody who attended the Kate Mulgrew panel, you could tell this woman has inspired so many people in their career choices, their family choices, just being this icon, like a single working mother raising her children while inspiring all these people. Like, she had a huge impact on people, and I think she's okay with returning to this inspirational, iconic role once again in the future.
I have a question for Scott. Tyler and I bat this back and forth constantly on the podcast, but if you had to pick one TNG or one Star Trek alum to appear on this, you know, first season of Picard, or even early in the second season, like, who's the one that you really want to see the most?
I think it would be Beverly Crusher. I think she's the only one who's got unresolved issues with Jean-Luc Picard. The rest of them would be nice to see Geordi LaForge turn up, but his story didn't have anything really to do with Picard particularly.
Yeah.
We need to see, you know, did he get with her eventually? I mean, I know the books are non-canonical here, and we tried to stick to canon on this podcast, but they do get married in the books quite early on in the TNG relaunch, and they said that they're a happy couple. So
I don't want them to be a happy couple. Like, that, it's not interesting though from a dramatic perspective. I honestly think it's more interesting if it's like these lingering unresolved issues after knowing each other for 50 years at this point.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of intrigued by maybe them somehow having to reconnect and try to resolve those issues versus us finding them in a happy spot where maybe we missed out on kind of the interesting things that would have had to be resolved in the interim.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Cam, is there somebody popping out to you that you, like, we've talked about it, but lay it down for us now after attending this convention, attending this panel?
I mean, look, I would like to see the Crusher story resolved in some way as well. But I'm not going to answer that because we already just talked about Crusher, so that would be boring. I really want to see Q.
Yeah.
And, you know, John DeLancey was asked and just, like, said, you know, I haven't even been approached. But, of course, let's just say, for the sake of argument, John DeLancey is showing up as a cameo at the end of season 1. Do you really think he's going to go on stage and be like, yep, things seem to be rolling?
Exactly. Like, my agent's deep into negotiation with CBS All Access right now. Just wanted to announce that here at this convention.
Yeah, not a chance. Yeah.
Unless you're Bob Picardo. In which case, you tell everyone, and then that's fine.
I still don't understand this Bob Picardo stuff, because why would an agent be in negotiations for season 2 of Picard when they haven't even stopped season 1 filming at this point?
It makes no sense.
Yeah, that's why I'm like, huh?
And Bob Picardo did not mention that on the panel.
No, that's true. Yeah.
So I guess a highlight I will jump to, maybe I should just play off of that one, actually, and talk about the Doctors panel we had, which brought together Gates McFadden, John Billingsley.
Wilson Cruz was a bit of a surprise as well. We also had the appearance of one Sidig El-Fadil, who isn't always at these conventions. So we had 5 of these Doctors on stage.
And of course, Picardo,
Rob Picardo as well. We had 5 of the Doctors on stage for the first time. It was fantastic. Again, it goes back to kind of the inspirational sort of aspect, a lot of people going up and telling them what inspirations they were. But it's also great to mix it up because sometimes you get a lot of the same dynamic play out if it's the same actors from the same shows on stage with each other. If you mix it up with actors from every single series, they're going to be bringing different energy to it. And it was funny. It wasn't stiff. Let's be honest. Like, anytime that you put John Billingsley on stage, it's never going to be boring.
Yeah.
And him just joking around about how he's the least inspirational doctor. which is true. I don't know how many people are inspired to go to medical school because of Phlox, but it's always a hoot to have him there. And like, Gates McFadden is always like super thoughtful with everything that she approaches. And
it's a good mashup because, yeah, you have like a Sitting Alpha Adele, who's a very thoughtful, sincere actor. And then you balance that out by throwing in John Billingsley, who's a madman.
Yeah.
And so it was a really fun mix-up of personalities. Wilson Cruz is someone I've really come to really enjoy at these conventions as well.
Well, he was hilarious too, because everybody was going in line talking about how they inspired people. And then Wilson Cruz said, "I inspired people to be gay." And it was funny because the joke is he is saying, "This is how hot I am. This is people I want to get with me at this point." And like, the crowd was roaring at this. He's turning out to be like another one of these like treasures that always has great energy on these panels.
I mean, we should give the guy credit as well. He wasn't even supposed to be at this convention. He was meant to be at his brother's wedding. And unfortunately, due to some flight scheduling problems, he decided, instead of going back home and staying where he was, you know, filming Discovery, he would come down here for a day and a half just to be with his friends and family, which are us, I suppose, now. And, you know, take photos all day on Saturday and Sunday. Appeared at quite a few panels, and I think really lifted those panels up.
Yeah.
It's quite scary to think about what it would have been like if he wasn't here.
John Billingsley would have been taking center stage at that point.
Yeah.
But the doctor's panel was fantastic for me. Mm,
it really was.
One of the things that sometimes doesn't, you know, get enough attention from a lot of the fans here, though, is more of the behind the scenes sorts of panels that we've got going on. And so they had two of them. I'm going to cheat a little bit with my highlights here, but they had a Trials and Tribulations panel that we got to do a screening of the episode first.
I love it when they do that.
It's, again, that communal experience. And so then they followed that up immediately with the Okudas, as well as, I think it was Lolita Facho, the script coordinator back in the day, and then one of the VFX coordinators as well. They all came out on stage and is simply like a slideshow of behind-the-scenes stills, and they explained exactly how they accomplished all of these very intricate special effects. And I was just totally sucked in this entire time that I watched that. So what were your guys' takeaway from this kind of behind-the-scenes deal here, with like kind of a screening followed by this really in-depth look?
Yeah, I mean, they've done this in previous years where they did Far Beyond the Stars and brought out the cast to talk about it, and Ira Stephen Bear. But I actually think this worked better, where you had the technical people talking about what they achieved in Trials and Tribulations. First off, the episode is a blast. It is the cheapest form of programming for creation to just throw an episode on, and I should really be annoyed by it. And yet I love it, because there was another panel we saw where they showed House of Quark. Like, I love panels where they show us the episode and then break it down, and this Trials and Tribulations was a great example. And I mean, you watch that episode, it looks pretty seamless now. Like, it still does. All these years later, that episode is just a real triumph.
Like, I remember seeing some bits and pieces of Forrest Gump not too long ago, and that one hasn't aged, you know, with those kind of inserts, these, you know, people into historical events, those kinds of VFX shots. It actually hasn't aged as well as you might think versus the Trials and Tribulations. And I think, wow, like, just what a stunning accomplishment that they did here. And then just getting to geek out and figure out exactly how they accomplished things, and even just learning about the different film stock that they had to use for filming this one, so it would match up better with the lighting and everything. And they also explained how just they would have to compose certain shots because of Terry Farrell's height. Because she had like the big beehive hairdo, she had heels on, and she's like a 6 foot tall woman. So there's a certain shot where she had to be crouched over a console just so that she could fit in with one William Shatner in front of her in the shot. And it's just kind of like, oh, I would never have even thought about that's why it was composed like that, or the blocking was made that way. And it's just that sort of thoughtful stuff I love. Like, I just totally get sucked into. And I would really push people, like, you don't have to go to all the actors panels. Like, there's a lot of other cool behind-the-scenes stuff that was going on this week that maybe I'm a bit of a leading question for you, Cam, but was there another behind-the-scenes moment that you really liked?
Yeah, anyone who listens to the podcast knows that I have a great love for the motion picture. This year was the 40th anniversary. And so we got a panel. They didn't screen it, unfortunately. Boy, would I have loved that. I would have gotten up at like 6 a.m. to watch an early morning screening of the motion picture. But they did a special panel where they brought on the Akudas. They brought on Rick Sternbach. And they also brought on effects legend Douglas Trumbull, who worked on 2001, Close Encounters, Silent Running, and just did a breakdown really about how they achieved the effect sequences of the motion picture, which I think is... Look, people are mixed on that movie, but I think everyone really remembers the introduction to the Enterprise in that movie and some of the great V'ger effects. And just to hear Douglas Trumbull break these, how these they did these individual shots was absolutely incredible stuff.
The thing that stuck out to me most was a comment that he made about the way that VFX were done back in the day versus nowadays, where when you're working with miniatures, what happens though is you can't plan for certain surprises that will come out of it. Like, there's stuff that your imagination will never come up with when you're working with these miniatures, these lighting effects, etc., etc. And he made a very good point that I hadn't really thought about before, but with, you know, CG effects, you are telling the computer exactly what to do. So everything that you see on screen, it's limited by your own imagination here. So I'm far more impressed seeing shots of the refit Enterprise show up on screen. I feel as if I am there actually witnessing it versus, you know, seeing a shot of a CG USS Discovery and knowing, like, that looks great, but I know exactly how they accomplished that. They programmed it into a computer, you know. Yeah. Like, I'm not nearly as impressed by that, no matter how, you know, breathtaking it does appear to be.
And like, Douglas Trumbull could have done a whole panel just to himself.
Oh yeah.
The man has endless amounts of stories and managed to communicate very complex ideas very, very simply in a way that I think was genuinely entertaining. And I've been at some tech panels in the past where, you know, I mean, these guys are tech specialists. They aren't necessarily public speakers, and sometimes the information gets a little bit convoluted for the general audience, but I thought that Douglas Trumbull was amazing at it.
Well, there's just stuff that I wasn't even aware of, how, like, he actually directed a number of the sequences in Star Trek Motion Picture.
Because a lot of the best sequences.
A lot of the best sequences, you know, and Robert Wise is a very well-regarded director, and I think, you know, what it is really as a director, though, is, like, you are commissioning some people to take over certain things, and I think he knows if he has a talent like Douglas Trumbull, let's get this guy directing the space dock sequence. Like, he'll know exactly what to do. And look, it works. Like, this was a get for creation. Like, I think this is, like, maybe one of the best kind of guests that they've been able to land. Just as you said, Cam, he's a legend in Hollywood. And this was fantastic to just sit there and kind of just be in awe of everything that he accomplished in that film.
Definitely. You don't see legends necessarily show up at these conventions of...
Other than Tyler and Cam.
Obviously. Yeah. Of outside, you know, Star Trek films or TV, and like, to see a legend like this come in was incredible to me. It was kind of like a Harlan Ellison or you know, some, like, just some of these guys who maybe worked in Trek briefly but have huge bodies of work elsewhere.
Okay, so we love going to the Star Trek conventions, and but everything can't be, you know, peak. There are some valleys going on through this, and it's not as if we don't like going to the cons at all. We wouldn't keep coming back otherwise. But I don't know, was there anything that maybe left you a little disappointed to a certain degree, Scott, without bashing anything, but just pointing out that, hey, maybe X didn't work as well as you hoped it would?
I had one major gripe, which was the Jacqueline Kim panel with Glenn Morshower and Brian Thompson, basically celebrating the, I think it's the 25th anniversary of Generations.
Was the idea.
And I just felt that it was a very badly moderated panel, and it just wasn't very well led. The questions weren't great, and there was just a lot of bad energy coming from the stage. And I had the unfortunate pleasure of sitting through most of that panel and just wondering, why am I here? And it was just a very downbeat panel. What did you guys think of it?
Well, we were actually in line for our Jimmy Darren photo op.
That
was actually a fun experience for us because, like, he stopped us and he wanted us to go hang out with him at his booth and buy his CDs. And, like, this is the best Jimmy Darren encounter that I've had over the years. And I've had others that weren't as great as this. So, but the thing is, we were in line And in our WhatsApp group that we all share here at the convention, like, we were just getting updates from, like, this panel that just seemed to be, like, as you said, like, kind of a weird vibe going on the whole time, with maybe strange comments or stories being shared that made other people uncomfortable. And I'm not laying the blame on anyone. I just And the thing is, I've heard it from people outside of our friend circle. Like, I was in line for dinner last night, and people were, like, just kind of like, oh yeah, this was an uncomfortable one here. So we caught, what, Cam, maybe the last 25% of it?
Yeah.
It was a little, you could tell at that point, I think maybe the panelists had kind of given up on, you know.
I think we had the benefit too of coming in when all the audience questions were coming in. So they were at least getting maybe more targeted questions person to person, which made the energy at least a little more interesting to watch. But I think it was two things. I think you have a real, like, head-on collision of two issues here. One, yeah, the questions weren't very good from the moderator. You know, when you're asking Jacqueline Kim, what was it like to work with George Takei? Oy, you know, like, that is not good.
Yeah.
Like, that's basic research.
And for those that don't recall, Jacqueline Kim played Damora Sulu in Star Trek Generations, which did not feature George Takei.
Right.
And so it's like, it was kind of a awkward moment. I hear, because we weren't there for that. But
also on the flip side, not every personality type goes together well. We talked about the doctor's panel, how that group really did come alive together. But I think this was a case where it was three individuals, and I'm sure they're lovely people. I'm sure are totally capable of doing good panels, but it just was a bad combo of personalities. And, like, I have seen Brian Thompson before at panels. He did a solo panel here in Vegas once. And I saw that was, like, half an hour.
Okay.
And I think that was, like, 2012. I think that was my first convention. And that man is a character. And I don't know that I would ever necessarily put him on a panel with other people. Or at least you have to have very eccentric personalities with him. Like, very kind of offbeat personalities. Because maybe then you'd get a real wacky panel. But when you had two people that are a little more serious, it just, yeah, it created a weird vibe.
Okay. Cam, what's maybe one that left you wanting a little more to a certain degree?
I think we have to talk about Sonequa Martin-Green. Was a panel that I was really excited about. I really enjoyed Star Trek, the second season of Discovery. And I couldn't wait to hear her insights into this season, because I think it did a lot for smoothing out the show. She is the voice of the show. You know, they're not bringing Alex Kurtzman or the writers or Michelle Paradise on stage to talk about the journey of Discovery this year.
Michelle Paradise being the co-showrunner of Star Trek Discovery Season 2 and going into Season 3. She was there
in
the audience watching all of her actors up on stage, and they were cheering her on. She was jumping out of the crowd, waving and everything. And Cam, you and I kept saying, like, why is she not on stage doing a panel at a certain point? Like, yeah. She would have so many great insights to share.
Yes, but, you know, Sonequa Martin-Green was the voice of Discovery, the one we all were going to hear her thoughts on Season 2. And maybe, you know, not spoilers or anything, but maybe some hints as to what Season 3 was going to bring. And we got this moderated panel where they basically read the Memory Alpha page of Star Trek Discovery. We literally went episode to episode, in many cases, reciting the plot points of episodes. It was like watching, you know, Tyler, you and I have griped about some of these recap shows like The Talking Dead.
Sure.
It was like it was like something like that, where I'm just listening to them talk about, hey, remember when Discovery met Ripper? And I'm like, yes, I do.
I watched this episode.
Yes.
You're not getting any insights into the series or her journey in the series at all. Like, so, I don't know. Like, for us, it was just exposition dump, without really diving into what makes SMG kind of tick as, like, the lead on this series. And, like, I think we're kind of bummed out with her, because you could tell on stage, this woman is a ball of energy, though.
And she was really fun last year.
And the other thing is, like, you could tell by the time we got to the very end of the panel, like, she had stories chambered, because she was just like, what did you guys think about me having my husband play my father on the show? Was that weird? But the thing is, the panel's over. She had to get off stage. Like, and there's another story that we could tell she had chambered. And I don't know. It was a bummer, because, like, she is kind of the face of Star Trek right now.
Yeah.
And she just kind of got sidestepped to a certain degree by a panel devoted entirely to recapping the plot of the first two seasons. And, like, it wasn't all that interesting to watch.
I thought it was boring to sit through for a big chunk of it, because you got to remember, this is day 5 of the convention. It's Las Vegas. People are tired. You don't want to go out with a very dry recap of a show, because You know, it wasn't just me bored. I looked to my right and, like, a guy in our row was falling asleep. You want to have some energy, and I know Sonequa Martin-Green has it because I saw it last year. She did, I think, a panel in pretty much the exact same time slot with the Discovery cast, and it was a blast. And so to have this panel was just kind of a bummer way to wrap it up. And, you know, Scott, what was your thought?
I mean, I had the unique honor of being in the gold ticket this year and in the front row of gold as well. And I was sat directly in front of Sonequa Martin-Green and couldn't be more than 3 or 4 meters away. And now I'm sitting through this and it's a Sunday in Vegas. I'm feeling it and I start to drift off. And she can see me drifting off. And it's like being under the gun. I'm trying to keep myself awake, looking at my WhatsApp group, trying to use my phone to keep myself awake, but then not also looking like I'm not listening to her at all
right,
on my phone. And I had to then just leave at some point. I think I just went to go to the toilet and then I just left because I had to get a coffee and, you know, do something else with my day.
It was quite unfortunate because it was also the final panel of the entire convention.
Yeah.
You know, there's a break and then we have the big Rat Pack lounge act from the DS9 actors, which is always a blast to kind of really finish off this great convention. But this is the final afternoon panel of the entire convention and it was just not a way to go out.
No, and the thing is, like, Sonequa Martin-Green is incredibly sincere. She just seems like the greatest person in the world, quite frankly. And you want to have those experiences where fans can ask her questions. And we got only a few minutes. You know, we didn't mention it in our highlights, but it really was a highlight. We had a panel earlier in the convention where LeVar Burton was on stage with Michael Dorn. And a sight-impaired fan came up and talked to LeVar Burton and said, you know, he was also, and he quoted himself, you know, a blind engineer. And he really related to LeVar Burton. And LeVar Burton, who'd brought the visor and worn it on stage, had this moment where he walked over to this fan and let him actually, you know, feel the visor in his hands. And, like, what an amazing moment. You know, Scott, you said you were tearing up.
Yeah, I mean, it really got me. It hit me. I didn't know he was bringing the visor anyway. That was a great visual in and of itself.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
LeVar wearing his own visor, screwing it into his head, which is quite a scary thing to think about. He did that for 7 years. But then taking it down to this guy and, you know, they see with their hands. He held the visor from Star Trek. That must have made that guy's entire year, I would imagine. That was a hell of a moment.
Totally. And, you know, I think Sonequa Martin-Green, I want to see her kind of have those moments with fans because I think she's someone who feels very strongly about Star Trek and what she brings to it and how the fans, you know, are reacting to it. And I would love to have a moment where she had a sincere meeting of minds with a fan versus journeying through Star Trek Discovery Season 2, Episode 5.
Yeah, yeah. For me, I'm grateful for this convention, so I have no lowlights, guys. I can't believe how you guys are just so awful. But I'll say the one thing that maybe bumped me out, though, is they're advertising the Star Trek Picard cast as appearing here at the convention. Jonathan Frakes, always amazing. Jonathan Del Arco just talking about his experience and how, you know, Trek helped him so much, you know, just survive day to day, you know, make these conventions work for him as he's eking out a living as an actor. And of course, Jerry Ryan is featured on there. But that was it for the so-called Star Trek Picard cast. I think a lot of us were expecting, if not Patrick Stewart, then maybe one of the series regulars like a Michelle Hurd or Alison Pill to maybe just make a very brief appearance. And I'm not saying they need to spoil anything, but just maybe give us some insights into what makes their characters tick or what is it like to be playing off of Patrick Stewart, you know? We didn't get any of that. And we were kind of, I think everybody expected something more like that.
Well, last year we had Patrick Stewart showing up and making the big announcement, which was incredible. And so I think we all thought, you know, with Discovery going into season 3, Lower Decks obviously going to launch soon, and Picard. And Picard, you know, they really did emphasize Picard cast on stage. They kept it vague. They didn't mention anyone else other than Frakes.
Yeah, they said Jonathan Frakes and Picard cast.
Yes, and I mean, I think we all thought we might get something, some sort of announcement. Comic-Con got a lot of big stuff, you know, a couple weeks ago. And so we thought, one of these series is going to give us something. Picard seemed like the obvious one because it's going to be first out of the gate. And, you know, Picard and cast are coming. And we really didn't get anything whatsoever.
Well, we were discussing this last night. Like, is there any news about Star Trek really coming out of this convention here?
None.
You know, because we were even speculating maybe they'll have something to share, if not about a Pike spinoff, then maybe more Pike and Spock short trek adventures that are possible that, I mean, we know that those are coming, but we didn't get actually any additional information about them, despite having Ethan Peck here along with Anson Mount. So I kind of thought that CBS would have something chambered for, like, the hardest of the hardcore Star Trek fans that exist in the world that are coming out to this. And, you know, and believe me, not to come off as ungrateful, this was fantastic to sit through, get some insights, but it was just like, we kind of thought something would come out of it. I think the most that we got out of it, though, was the Star Trek Lower Decks panel, though, where they're breaking down what makes these characters tick. Like, I thought that was interesting. That's all you really need to do, because they totally sold me explaining how this is a character-based show.
Yeah.
That's what's going to make you want to continue moving in and watching week to week. And I mean, they sold me on their series in a way that, like, I'm watching Star Trek Picard no matter what, but I wish that maybe they had done a better sales pitch and maybe taken a cue from the Lower Decks people.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Okay, well, let's talk about the vendors room, because when you go to Star Trek convention, you're going to lose most of your life savings. And, you know, we all come home with a lot of great stuff and a lot of crap that we're like, wait, what? Why did I buy this? Because you kind of get a high in the vendor's room where everything feels like an essential purchase. But I want to know, you know, from all of us, we'll start with Scott. But what were some purchases you made that were really exciting, you know, this convention?
I mean, usually I'm willing to drop a few $100 in that room, and I usually budget for it. But I think this year was quite a low year for me. I bought a couple of $5 t-shirts from the Roddenberry sale. They were selling a lot of their stock. That went quite quickly. I also bought the Hallmark ornament, 1701A model, and that was it, really. I can't say I had a big thing in the vendor's room.
I'm in the same boat as you, Scott, and I just wonder if I've already depleted my life savings from previous years, and that's why I...
you can't handle any more Playmates action figures, let's be honest. Well,
you know, that's just it. Like, I was looking around, I was like, I don't know if there's anything more that I don't already have, you know, or that I'd be interested in, you know, because I've got the Eagle Moss ships that I want, I've got the Playmates action figures that I want. I was in the market for some shirts. I picked up, I think, one or two shirts that were really nice. And so the highlight for me, though, I got a Quark's shot glass and a Quark's beer stein. So those are both pretty cool for me, and I'm very happy. And you and I, Scott, we're both kind of in the market for pins this year. So we both found some cool-looking pins that we're very delighted by.
And you guys also did a photo op with Anson Mount.
Yeah.
Of course, not related to the vendor's room, but also related to spending money at the convention.
True, and that's just it. Yeah, like, because these photo ops, they're not free. Unless you can corner a very fantastic Star Trek Lower Decks writer and convince them to do a selfie with you. So that was great for me. But yeah. Cam, what was maybe a purchase that you really dug?
I did a lot this year with autographs, and I just want to thank friend of the show, Johnny Mancuso, who hooked me up with some autograph tickets that I had some great experiences with. Alexander Siddig in particular, he was fantastic, really nice guy. But there's two I really want to mention, and that is in the vendor's room, Natalia Nogalic, who played Nechayev on Next Generation, had a table, and she was doing photos, selfies, in costume as Nechayev. And she's been here previous years. We've never done a photo op. Don't really know why. You know, there's so many to choose from. Often others get overlooked. It took us this many years to do Jimmy Darren. But I was going by her table, and I saw just, like, her prices, and I thought, like, wow, like, she was charging, you know, less than most of the celebs here. And there's a lot of celebs here who charge quite a bit for, you know, a single appearance on a Star Trek show. And I don't necessarily go for all of those. And I just looked at her prices, and, you know, she was charging like $10 for a selfie with herself dressed as Nechayev. And I thought, like, I really want to support this. Like, this is a woman who's genuinely here to have fun with the fans, you know, and not just like, oh, kind of the cynical, like, just whatever. And I had a great discussion with her talking about Nechayev and how, you know, Tyler, you and I did the episode on why admirals suck. And I said, you know, you were not included on the list of the ones that suck. And I talked to her about how the character really worked because she wasn't tied to one side. She wasn't a constant force of negativity on the show, which a lot of admirals are, where they're there just to be wrong all the time, where she was someone who she could be wrong. But then in another episode, she would be supporting the captain. And I really appreciated that about her. And yeah, I had, you know, a really fun selfie with her. I ended up doing an autograph photo as well. And so, yeah, if you're at a convention, you see her, go by her table because she was just so nice and so much fun.
And I think for a lot of the, you know, more lower tiered Star Trek actors, though, I think you can make a lot more money just doing these sorts of things versus maybe kind of selling for higher prices. I think if you just do more quantity,
yeah,
you can probably walk away with a lot more money in your pockets just because of what the prices are versus your competitors. So
totally, yeah. I mean, and not to name any names, but there was some Star Trek stars we saw who appeared in, you know, a single episode manning fairly empty tables through the week, which you don't want to see. Like, yeah, you know, you want everyone to have those experiences with fans, and sometimes, you know, the price can be a bit of a block for that. But the other thing I bought that I was really excited about was they had the co-author of the Star Trek Guide to the Animated Series, Aaron Harvey, doing a panel in the CBS All Access room talking about this book that's coming out, this beautiful full-color Guide to the Animated Series. For some reason, this book didn't exist. How this book had not been written over the last, you know, many decades, who knows? But I was able to buy an early copy, it's not released yet, and get it signed by him. And that was really cool because, you know, going into this convention, I didn't know that this book was really in the ether, that it was going to be something that was going to be coming out. And to get that and get it signed was really exciting. And, you know, I should just say, for those who maybe are looking at the artwork, I also did a photo op with Mary Wiseman that came out incredible, where I managed to work in a Boyce reference. And so you can see that there.
A Dr. Boyce. For those who don't know what Boyce means, he's the original...
Everyone knows what Boyce means.
He was the original martini-making doctor on the 1701 during the Cage that we got to meet. So he's kind of an ongoing joke on the show because he's just this random character that we really want revived in the Star Trek Discovery universe. And maybe what if a Pike spinoff is afoot, maybe we could get some more Boyce action in the future.
Yeah, well, Jordan Hoffman told me Boyce is featured in the new Discovery novel. So I was like, oh, well, hopefully, you know, Kirsten Beyer does oversee that, that, you know, side of the Star Trek world right now. Maybe, you know, Boyce's name is percolating in the writer's room. Maybe there's some passion for Boyce. So we'll see. So I guess just final thoughts on the convention 2019, if you kind of had to sum it up in a couple sentences. Scott?
I would say another great success by Creation. I felt really blessed to be up in Gold this year. And again, big shout out to Johnny Mancuso for hooking me up with that one. He's a good friend of mine. And it was a different experience for me being that close to the stage. I loved it. I'm happy, and I'll be back again next year.
Yeah, I'm in the same boats as you. Always great to come here. And it's just the communal experience. The other thing is, Cam, you and I, we did a panel this year, Star Trek's Biggest Unsolved Mysteries. We had fun just geeking out with each other on stage, as we often do back at home when we're doing the podcast week to week. But it's also kind of cool, like, when you get off the stage, and then for the remainder of the week, people are coming up to you and saying, hey, I enjoyed seeing you on stage. Like, it's cool to think that other people are geeking out just the way that we do as well. And if we can tackle a fun comment and get like positive feedback, and I just really did appreciate, you know, the great feedback that we got from people after
that. And just thank you to everyone who came to the panel, because it was our busiest panel ever. You know, this is our fourth year doing it, and we had great feedback, and just the audience interplay we got with some great questions. It was a lot of fun. We always have fun doing it, no matter the size of the crowd, but this was a really special year.
We weren't against Patrick Stewart this year like we were a couple years ago, which God bless all of our friends that came out to our panel that year.
You're welcome for that. You're welcome.
Thank you, Scott.
Yeah, for me, like, this con every year really does remind me of how important Star Trek is. It's easy when you're at home, oh, I'll watch an episode of Star Trek. Okay, now I'm going to watch a Marvel movie. Okay, now I'm going to, and you kind of can just, you know, our lives are dictated by franchise nowadays. And so you kind of hop through all this entertainment, you know, whether it's TV shows. You don't really think maybe that much about it. But when you go to the Star Trek experience, you know, Creation does an amazing job putting on a show that actually makes you feel the wonder of Star Trek. And that's a lot to say, considering Star Trek's been around so long. In theory, the wonder should be gone after going to the convention this many times. I should be going like, yeah, here's my money, whatever. But I don't feel that way. No. Every time I go, there's a really special feeling. And, you know, when the Rat Pack performs on the final night and that show ends, they start pulling the stickers off the seats. It's one of the most depressing moments of my life, doing these every year. Like, it's just so grim.
Yeah. That's why I think we're lucky. We always kind of plan it so that we get to decompress for a day and a half after the convention.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it would just be a total crash back to reality if we had to go home, take a red eye back to our hometowns. That was just not fun. So we still have another day to hang out with our friends. We're gonna just chill, hit the city, and have a fun pizza party.
That's right. Okay, so until next year's con, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Jump on over to the Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod. Tyler, what are we doing next time?
Hey, Cam, we are going to jump over to Star Trek Voyager Finale Endgame. I think this is going to be a fun one. We're going to have a very special guest. I don't want to spoil it, though, but this guest you might be familiar with after hearing us crow on and on about the Star Trek convention. No, it's not going to be Jerry Ryan subbing in, but it's kind of a cool series finale that we can kind of dig into maybe what works with this one and what makes it distinct from other series finales in the Star Trek franchise.
Okay, so you can, of course, find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam V as in Vendor's Room Induced Bankruptcy Smith.
You can find me at Reportin, that's R-E-P, P as in Pizza Party, O-R-T-O-N.
And Scott.
Oh, and you can find me on Twitter at Tiberius Hardy, it's H-A-R-D-Y as in why have I not had any salad since I got here into Vegas.
Oh, it's killing me. Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.